and welcome to episode 85 of the Redleaf Retrocast. Retro gaming is the episode today. Your host JD and my two best buddies in the world, Colin and Joey. Joey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Doing quite well. It's been a good nice little weekend. Really cold here in the Island of Rhodes. In the single digits these days.
Where's that club?
Yeah.
It's been beautiful here in Houston.
Yeah, my mom's texted me, I got the AC on, it's 72 degrees Fahrenheit, and I'm like, it's 11. I have
a little warm, so today, right now it's about like 60, so It's a beautiful morning.
Colin, what's up with you?
Oh, it's been a very busy week for me. I've had nothing but 13-hour shifts all week.
Boo.
Except that one shift where it was 12 and a half. But on top of that, I ran out of washer fluid, and my car's hood won't open. And it's telling me I need to change the oil, so I got to bring my car to the mechanic tomorrow and get that hood opened.
The frozen latch, shut? The latch, okay.
Yeah, that little lever you have to pull to get to...
Car maintenance. Get to... Fun.
Yeah.
I'm overdue for oil change myself.
Yeah, mine says 20 days.
I do my own oil changes, so.
I did, but I don't like doing it in an apartment, and it's just easier to get someone else to do it for me.
It's cheaper to do it for someone else, actually, for me.
Yeah, for the most part.
But there's always that chance that those mechanics will tell you something's wrong with your car that isn't actually wrong with your car, and then fleece you for a bunch of money.
So you ignore them.
Yeah, I take it to a car wash to do oil changes, so they're not going to really push anything too hard.
Right, because what are they going to fix?
Well, your air filter. Now I'm good. I'll do it myself.
Right.
End of story.
Well, I usually just change out the air filters anyways, and it costs like, $5? So... Like, yeah, they're probably due.
Yeah, but I can just buy myself and do it. They're not hard. They're trying to overcharge. I'm like, yeah, I'll get it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, today's topic on this retro gaming podcast are rail shooters, a really fun genre of video games out there that I think is kind of lost to time in a lot of ways. So that was a fun topic.
Yeah, but I think they're
dwindling away like the arcades that they originated from.
I think VR can bring them back, though.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned
that. That's
true. Because a good chunk of my PSVR games that I have are indeed rail shooters. There's Vex. There's Beat Saber. That's basically a rail shooter, but with music. There's... Oh, I just got this like gun game where you're going down a rail and you're shooting dudes left and right. I can't remember the name. Pistol Whip. Pistol Whip. There it is. I do remember. Shut up, Joey.
I do want to try.
There's Blood and Truth. That's basically a rail shooter for VR. So you're right, Joey. The VR games are very much rail shooters, and those tend to be the best ones.
Yeah, because, I mean, movement in VR is kind of hard. So if you don't have to move and just have to shoot, it's the easiest thing to do.
Absolutely.
Would Half-Life Alyx qualify as a rail shooter?
Maybe.
A complex one, because you got puzzles and shit.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I guess. I mean, you can't move around with your feet until some kind of omnidirectional treadmill gets released to the public.
Right. Yeah, I suppose so, but I guess a rail shooter to me is auto movement rather than kind of point and click and go to the next area.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's pretty much the same concept. So, where would I be without plugging all of the stuffs? We are an anime podcast as well. Go check out our retro anime reviews. We just did Ikitosen and Butt Attack Punisher Girl, so we're really into the ecchi these days. But that'll change soon with the next couple.
Butt Attack what?
Butt Attack Punisher Girl. You heard right, Joey.
Yeah, listen to that one.
What is... I'm confused.
Don't worry about it. Just go listen.
I don't have to worry about it. I'm gonna have to listen to that.
Really, yeah. That was a very interesting anime that we went over. We got wrestling. Lots of wrestling content coming out. It's kind of taken over the podcast in a lot of ways with less gaming stuff. But we are still doing our two classics, which is these retro gaming ones and the retro anime. The wrestling ones have come down to a much tighter subject of promotions, some topics, and then the Patreon for the historical stuff, mostly the women's wrestling. But I'm doing Starrcade reviews, going back to the 80s with that, and really a lot of learning experiences, which is a lot of fun. So if you're into wrestling content, then head out over to the Patreon, support what we're doing for historical purposes, and it's a lot through tape trading, whether it's virtual tape trading or actually getting DVDs from Japan, Europe over here. So it all goes to that and goes into a Google Drive that, basically join the Discord and everything, and you get to be a part of all that. That's Red Leaf Retrocast Patreon, as well as the website redleafretrocast.blogspot.com, and then follow everyone on Twitter, BowlingJD, etc., etc. So there you go. All the plugs are done. Colin, let's start with you. No work stuff, please. Just the games that you've been playing.
Well, last night I finally beat Breath of the Wild.
Hell yeah, that's a long time coming.
Please clap.
I will do no such thing. I will golf clap away from the microphone, though.
That's right, guys. Since I've already used hold your applause twice already, I'm taking the Jeb Bush route and going the opposite direction. Now applaud, goddammit!
What was your favorite boss fight?
Good question.
Or favorite dungeon would be a better question, I suppose.
Probably the camel. The big robot camel in Gerudo Valley.
Where you had to rotate the entire... Wait, no. I'm thinking of the... Wait, yeah, that is the one where you have to rotate the whole dungeon, right?
That might be the bird. Actually, now that I think about it, the bird was probably my favorite. It was just a lot of cool puzzles involved. To you have to make it bank a certain direction in order to make certain things move in a different direction, like whether it's big blocks to form a path across a hole in the bottom, or You got this gondola that's underneath the wing.
Right.
And you do that, you ride on the gondola while it's sliding towards an enemy. Or actually, no, it was it's that eyeball that forms all that black and red goo that you have to make disappear. And then you use your stasis time lock ability to make the gondola stop, and then while it's frozen in time, you fire an arrow at the eyeball, and then you can enter the area that it leads to.
Yeah, there were some really cool puzzles in that game. I my favorite boss fight was definitely the bird one, because you fight the boss in midair, which I thought was really cool. Each one was I think my least favorite was definitely the very first one I did, which was the water blight, where you're on like platforms and he electrocutes shit, and yeah, I didn't like that one.
Yeah, I kind of felt like the ending was a bit lackluster. I mean, all that build up and it just kind of ends without a whole ton of fanfare, at least compared to something like Ocarina of Time or Wind Waker. I mean, Ocarina of Time's last boss and climax and ending all felt really epic, but somehow Breath of the Wilds didn't really have the same feeling. And maybe if it featured an escape sequence from the castle where you have to dodge fire from turrets, or if in the final fight with that giant, with Ganon in his giant four-legged form, you glide towards his head, but occasionally drop through the air to dodge hits from him. Something like Shadow of the Colossus in that regard. And then do like a downward stab on his head, similar to Wind Waker. I don't know. Just didn't quite meet my expectation, but I still really like the game overall. It's definitely better than Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword. I'd probably put it in my top five. Zelda games.
Yeah, at least top five, you know, whatever.
I mean, there's a lot to do in there in this game. I mean, I know I had complaints about it at the very beginning, but once I really got the ball rolling with it, it really grew on me. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the sequel brings.
Yeah, it'll come out someday, I'm sure.
And I may end up purchasing Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity.
Ah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of, especially with the PS5 coming out, and I swear it's not real at this point. My Nintendo Switch with the specific games that are coming out for it lately. Why is my cat biting my butt right now? He's digging behind
because
me.
Because
we
talked about the butt attack.
Oh, right.
So I have heard.
That's a new one, kitty cat. That's a new one. Yeah, my Nintendo Switch is getting a lot of use with... I got Cyber Shadow.
Ah, yeah.
That's a new game that just came out by the makers of Shovel Knight, Yacht Club Games.
Well, that's the other thing. I also played Sense, a cyberpunk ghost
yes,
story.
Yes, hold that thought, because I played it too. After the last episode, learning about big boobed cyberpunk girls in a ghost story, I was all into it. But Cyber Shadow is a game I highly recommend. If you're a fan of Shovel Knight, if you're a fan of Ninja Gaiden games on the NES, without the wall jumping ability, it is an incredibly well-made game. The music is phenomenal. It really gets you just pumped into the whole universe that this is in. The life system is really neat, where you have to kill enemies and get the little boxes that hold kind of energy meters. So if you get hit too much or you run out of energy, your character will die because he's a cyborg type situation. It's really cool. It plays incredibly responsive. I can't recommend it enough. The boss fights remind me of Contra, in the sense where it's the game is simplistic enough where you can jump right in and play it and just hack and slash away. So much like the Contra, but it plays as responsive as a Ninja Gaiden in the way it kind of jumps and moves. So it's a good little hybrid between the two. Much like how Shovel Knight was kind of a Mega Man hybrid DuckTales type gameplay. I am very much addicted to it. It's a lot of fun. It's only $20. Use your Nintendo points so you can get a discount on it like I did with how much you do. I'm still picking away at Phoenix Wright, and I'm...
Oh.
Yeah, still picking away at it. I'm on...
Which case are you on?
I'm on case 3, so.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I
haven't kind of boring.
That. Yeah, I haven't. Yeah, it's not really feeling how it starts out, not unlike the others, but I'm also picking away at Danganronpa.
But if you can power through that one, case 4 is well worth it.
Yeah, as you discussed in our retro gaming episode, we played Phoenix Wright on.
Yeah, detective games.
Yeah, and then Danganronpa, I just finished case.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I just finished the third trial, fourth trial, whatever. The one where Sakura is the main focus. Just finished that one. That one was very long. That was where I stopped last time. It was like midway through the trial. So I just got past that one now. That's finally I'm past it. Definitely expect a long review over that on the Patreon, $1.50 tier for that one.
All right.
I would be reminiscent without saying I will be watching the WWE Royal Rumble. The patrons have spoken. They want the review, so that will be on the $5 tier. Just for my pain to watch that fucking show that I'll be doing tonight. I'm not excited.
When is that today?
That is tonight, yeah.
Royal Rumbles are generally fun.
generally fun, but I have not. Yeah, I have not had a good time watching a Royal. I mean, the match itself is just kind of kick back, relax. But when the last, I would say, 11 years, I just shake my head at it all. I go, yeah, okay, this isn't going to work out. Or it's like, I really wish there was more story in it. But that's for the wrestling podcast. And okay, so Sense, a cyberpunk ghost story. Colin,
yeah.
Before I go over my thoughts, let me hear yours.
Yeah, I played through it maybe about half an hour to an hour, and so far it's not bad. I mean,
any game-breaking bugs you've come across?
Not so far. I mean, the main character's limb movements make her look like a paper doll, which kind of takes me out of it.
The frame rate's really weird when you run.
Not just that, it's just like when her legs move, the top part of her thigh just kind of moves upward into over top of the rest of her sprite. That's what makes her look like a paper doll. But I still like the visual style, and the scares can be legit freaky, like with the ghost with the limbs and neck bent in the wrong direction chasing you, and you have to close a door to buy time to unlock a file cabinet to get a fuse for the fuse box in order to get the elevator on the other end of the hall working. The whole time you hear him banging on the door.
It's very much like Deadly Premonition in the way those are portrayed.
Ah, yeah.
You've played that game?
No, I haven't. I'm interested to see where it goes story-wise. I mean, it's kind of vague right now, although I noticed I ran out of lighter fluid in my lighter early on, so I may have screwed myself over in
you
the long
run. You
did not.
There. I can confirm.
Okay. But right now I'm stuck on the floor where you come out of the elevator after escaping that first ghost. And I'm trying to figure out what to do next. But one thing that really ramps up the tension is that there's no pausing. I mean, you can bring up menus on your character's handy-dandy PDA, but time doesn't stop when you do that. Meaning if you're being chased or stalked by a ghost, the game won't let you take time to breathe and think of a strategy. And I think that's really clever for a horror game.
The atmosphere and the way the game plays and solving puzzles really reminds me of the original Clock Tower on the Super Nintendo.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
Yeah, we also played on the podcast. I really like it. I haven't had to look up a walkthrough. Everything seems to flow just fine. The dialogue provides its own hints to guide you in the right direction to what you need. I did come across a number puzzle that was very confusing at first, involving calendar dates. I did eventually figure it out, but it felt very Silent Hill puzzle-esque to me, where I'm like, I don't know if I can really jive with that. I love the way the game has you die. It's very just, oh, yeah, that makes sense. There's one, Colin, there's going to be a moment where a ghost girl wants to play rock, paper, scissors with you. If you deny playing her rock, paper, scissors, she just immediately kills you. It's really funny. I'm like, oh, okay. And that, yeah.
It's like when the game warns you about not walking into a puddle that's got a live electric wire in it. And then I walked into it anyway, and you're dead.
Yeah, I stuck my hand in a garbage disposal, it shows a picture of her with her hand just completely just torn to shreds, and there's veins and shit. Geez. You're spurting blood, and it goes, "Yep, you died." So I'm like, "Oh, check under the sink." Yeah, the first option was there was two options: stick your hand in or check under the sink. I was like, "I'm gonna stick my hand in." She died. Check under the sink, and then the dialogue is, "Oh, look, the garbage disposal was on. Good thing I checked." I'm like, "Yeah, of course." Yeah, there's a lot of really funny deaths like that in the game. I do like the presentation through this kind of comic book manga cutscene-esque. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of old NES Super Nintendo way to present cutscenes.
More games need to have those.
Yeah, I really like the presentation at all. Is it the best well-made game in the world? No. Like I said, the frame rate when she runs is kind of wonky. I'm playing on the Nintendo Switch, by the way. I don't know what you're playing on, Colin.
Switch, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so we're both playing on Switch. The load times going in between hallways and stuff is a little too long for my taste. I kind of wish that was a lot faster. Not the end of the world, though. Especially because there's so much backtracking in the game you got to do. Because you got to go in and out of rooms, up and down floors to get the items that you know you need to get. Yeah, it's I am generally having a real fun time with the game. It's got a good amount of spooky to it. I love the random ghosts that kind of come in and out of existence. I do like the whole idea of the cyberpunk aspect of it, where all the characters in the game can kind of interchange body parts to make themselves more attractive in the way they think they need to be. So that's kind of its kayfabe reason why a lot of these women have just giant boobage going on.
Yeah.
Very much approve of this. There's cosplay that you could do. It's like, oh, take her jacket off. Oh yeah. Mm.
Just like Katana Zero.
Yeah. Exactly. Kind of the same way. I'm I keep saying this. I'm sure I've brought this up on many other podcasts, but the Nintendo Switch has really become kind of my, not retro gaming device, but games that are made in the modern era in a retro style. How they play, how just the feel and presentation on the Nintendo Switch just kind of fits the vibe I get. So I have a lot of games that are just in that aspect to it all. So
yeah, that I do the same thing.
Yeah.
Now that I have one anyway.
And
if I'd had one sooner, I probably would have gotten CrossCode on it.
Right. So Sense and Cyber Shadow are my two games I'm playing the most right now, and I'm watching a lot of Let's Plays on Hitman 3 since I don't have a PS5, and that shit is hysterical. I love watching play this game. Yeah, I watched a short donkey video of him playing it. Fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Okay, boys, it's level 1. These are usually the tutorial levels. Just, you know, get you into the game. He fucking shoots the two targets in the lobby, and then he just walks out. Oh, 16 seconds. Easy level.
The best. I like the banana.
The banana one, causing people to fall. I watched Jacksepticeye go through a whole level hitting people, knocking them out with a fish, which is really fucking funny. I think my overall favorite was Donkey getting the target to follow him, and he checks a bathroom. Let me just take you to my office, and there's like a million bodies in it.
Yep.
So funny. I love it. Hitman 3 is going to be probably the first game I'm going to buy when I find a PS5. Absolutely. It's going to be one of them.
Yeah, I saw a Girlfriend Reviews video of it, and one of the things the guy did was he just pushes a guy over the edge at the top of a skyscraper during like a big party in front of a whole bunch of people, and nobody reacts.
They're just like, oh, that's weird. He just went overboard. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Joey, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of things. For one, I've been doing the Ring Fit on the Switch.
Right.
Which it's decent workout. Sometimes I'm exhausted after that. I've been playing a lot of Diablo 3 because I just want something to grind. So, just mindless grinding with that. Some Phasmophobia with the new updates, and that's been hard and a lot of fun. A little bit of Rocket League, because Brett's been into it, and I suck at Rocket League, so usually just get drunk and play that, and piss off Megan for giggle screaming in the middle of the night, as she puts it. Then I played a game, Earth Defense Force.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah.
I don't remember which one it was, because it was at my brother-in-law's. We played that for hours. It's such a campy game. I love it. I might buy it on Steam, but I think a new one's supposed to come out this year, so I might wait for that. But it's just killing big aliens and bugs, and this one has like a Godzilla-like creature, and it's just mindless violence, and we were just playing that for hours. A lot of fun.
Stuff. All right. Joey, you made some money on the GameStop stock? This debacle?
Yep, I made a little money off that.
Good.
You know, got to get on that short squeeze. Got to take it to Wall Street.
Take it to Wall Street. By the time I found out about it, it was already like shut down. I was like, oh, okay.
Which is ridiculous. Robinhood not allowing you to buy, although they weren't the only ones. There was quite a few different, I guess, brokers. I don't know what the hell they call them. Apps that weren't letting you to buy like 12 different stocks. And then I guess for your protection. Well, Webull wanted to, but it's just the company they go through that handles all their selling and buying wouldn't let them to. So they're like, we want to, but they're not letting us.
Right.
So, but then they got back faster because I guess they were complaining to them. But a lot of people think they didn't have the capital for all this. So they couldn't let people buy and sell because they didn't have the money to do that. So it should be interesting what happens this week. See if it crashes the market or people just make millions. Except Wall Street. They should lose and keep losing.
Yeah, Wall Street mad because they're not the ones taking advantage of everybody. Yeah. Well, all right.
So you're not allowed to push back at us.
Of course. You can't do that. Only they can crash the market like in 2008.
Yep.
How dare you use our tactics against us?
Right, right. Same deal. Okay, we have a theme to talk about, so let's get to it.
All right.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I played the Contra drop. Someone mentioned that to us. Alrighty. Yeah. Joey, it was your theme pick for episode 85 here.
Yes, yes it was. Rail shooters, why not? So we haven't done it, and I wanted to make everyone suffer and play Pokemon Snap.
That is one of the games.
So that's the main reason why I got that chose it. I mean, rail shooters can either be really good or they could be extremely terrible.
I feel like we got some winners here for this one, though.
I think there's a couple good ones, and then there's Pokemon Snap.
Yeah, we'll get to Pokemon Snap here. It's not the first one listed, but... Yeah, I got to bust out the light guns for the first time in forever. That's a lot of fun. I wanted to do a light gun topic, but this actually worked out way better. So
I think some of these would be a lot better with a light gun. They probably made these really enjoyable.
Yeah, I played two of them. Two of them had a light gun, and then the other three did not. But I feel like the two that did not have a light gun, not necessary, but one definitely needed a light gun, so we'll get to that one. All right, Joey, first game.
Yeah.
First game, House of the Dead, Sega Saturn. Let me pull up here. Made it. Published by Sega, developed by Sega AM1. Came out on the arcade in 96, on the Saturn in 98, and Windows in 98. I think there is a couple remakes, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's sequels and compilation remakes and whatnot.
And I hope it comes to VR, but we'll see.
I mean, there's games that are like it on VR that you can get. Not exactly House of the Dead, but yeah, you get the idea. So, fun fact, I have this game on the Sega Saturn, but I have the Japanese version because the American version was in low production quantity, so it goes for like $170.
What?
Or you can just get the Japanese version for $20, which is what I did.
Wow, $170.
But, yeah, and I will caution if you go to eBay or something, because I had a friend who was who went through this. He thought he got a good deal on the American version, but what he got was the demo disc version of House of the Dead, which has its own collector's value in itself, but not the amount of money that people kind of trick you for. So he spent $50 on a demo disc, House of the Dead. So that is something I caution people buying this game with. Just get the Japanese version. Get yourself a 4MB cart that you can then play the Japanese games on your Sega Saturn. That's my cautionary tale. And a lot of these games you can beat in like half an hour to an hour, depending on your credits you use and whatnot. So. Continue, Joey.
So the game's about a scientist that has to save other scientists because of a zombie/monster outbreak. So you go around just shooting a bunch of things.
Yeah.
Hopefully simple. In the face.
Hopefully in the face, absolutely. Although I do like how you can shoot body parts off. That's really cool.
Yeah, Yeah, that was interesting. Some of the mobs are a little annoying, like the little grubs. Because you can't really shoot them until they're ready to attack you. So you're there just trying to kill them while they're on screen, but you can't. At least I wasn't able to. Maybe I just suck. But the constant reload gets a little annoying from time to time. But
got to time yourself out so you don't hear it, Joey.
Yeah. The music I thought was pretty good with it.
Oh, the music was kick ass. I love the music in this game.
Yeah, I think it was enjoyable. I think without a gun or VR arcade, it kind of loses it a little bit, trying to use a D-pad to line up your shots.
It wasn't the worst thing in the world, because once you go through a level once or twice, then you kind of know where to start moving your reticle prior, because you just get used to it and it's muscle memory. But yeah, the light gun was significantly better experience, at least for me. And it was just really fun just going, you know, clicking off the TV and getting back into it. It was very adrenaline heavy. I did beat this game. My second game I've beat in 2021, so hooray. Good
Is
stuff.
Is there only four levels? Because boss mode only had four bosses.
Yeah, there's only four chapters.
Okay. Yeah. I got past the first one, and then I died. I ran out of continues.
Aw, you need to get those infinite continues, man.
Yeah, probably. But I didn't want to use infinite continues. I want to see how far I can go without it.
Yeah, there's only four chapters. Not all the same house, but there is. I do like the idea of the game showing you weak point of the boss fights. That was really cool. So then you can just spam hit it, and then you beat it right away. Except the final boss, right? It's an unknown crazy super creature, and it moves like fucking Dracula, and that was really funny. The evil scientist. Here is my best creation, or whatever. Like, oh, you dare control me. Very classic cliche type stuff. Oh, why aren't you listening? No! I must.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked all the boss fights in this. They were really cool. I did like the effect of the very first one where you shoot its chest area, and it barfs.
Yeah, it's the only way to stop it from destroying
it. I always thought that was like oil pouring out of the... out of the wound.
It looked like fucking Exorcist green barf coming out. It was funny.
Yeah. Although I was having issues, I thought I was shooting the spot I was supposed to, but sometimes it just didn't register.
Yeah, you just gotta spam hit it, basically. Well, that's kind of the tactic in the game. Just spam shoot in the area, and eventually it'll trigger, so.
I remember the hanged man boss being a real pain in the ass just because he keeps flying around in circles and he's really hard to hit.
Yeah, the first time you face him, because on the fourth final chapter you do face the barfy robot guy again and the gargoyle that's going around. The gargoyle's significantly easier the second time around.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of like how these bosses are named after tarot cards. It's like you got Chariot, Hanged Man, Hermit... I forget what the last one's called. Magician, yeah. That was kind of cool. I do remember playing the original arcade light gun version of this game in movie theater arcades as a kid.
See, I played the second one. It was a lot of fun. I only played the second one. I never played the arcade original House of the Dead. I only played the sequel.
Ah. Well, to me, it could even... at times even be genuinely freaky to my 9-year-old brain.
Of course.
Of course, it wasn't until later that I realized just how cheesy the dialogue and voice acting were.
Oh, come on. Not so cheesy. So this is going to be a theme I'll say throughout all these games. I wish that there were more weapon choices rather than just a pistol or a machine gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
It does get a little boring. I like games where you can get your upgrades and switch it out, but
I believe the Virtual Cop series does that with different, like, you can get a shotgun and Uzis and whatnot, and then you can carry them onto other levels. It creates more replayability value, I feel, if you can use different guns at different times. You know, certain areas you can get a rocket launcher that can clear the space. That's always real cool to do. Nothing like that in House of the Dead. Definitely nothing like that in Pokemon Snap. That would be funny. Wait, though. Hey, Nintendo.
You didn't use the machine gun?
Machine gun in Pokemon Snap for the game coming out this year in 2021. Do it.
It takes a different meaning on Snap, but it still works. Why are you shooting all the Pokemon? Oh, he snapped.
Yeah. I watched a YouTube video of this to refresh my memory of the game, and I found for the Sega Saturn version, the loading screens were a real pain in the middle of stages because that it just killed the pace and flow of the level.
I thought it was okay. I liked the heartbeat going through it. And there wasn't too many of them, so I didn't feel like it
would. Yeah, I don't even remember even seeing one, so I guess they weren't that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably just the guy I was watching play.
Maybe. The best aspect of House of the Dead, which I really, really liked, was the good negative feature or positive negative feature of saving or accidentally killing the scientists that you go through the levels. If you accidentally shoot one, you lose a lantern life health thing. But if you save one, they give you one extra. And I really do wish you got more than five.
Yeah. Reminded me of Area 51.
I kill quite a few of the scientists.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Your first one run through, you basically kill them every time. The game does have certain areas where there's one in particular, I believe it was on Chapter 4, where there's an enemy in front of a scientist, so you spam it, and of course the scientist is directly behind him, so you accidentally shoot him. You go, shit. So that happened to me. Yeah. I was able to beat the game in under an hour in total.
What ending did you get?
What ending?
Apparently there's three. Yeah, there's three endings. Sophie live, die, or not there?
Oh, Sophie died. She died. She got thrown into the wall. She was all sad, and then she keeled over. She was dead as shit.
You got the normal ending.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Apparently the true ending is she's alive. But you have to get a lot of points for that. And then there's a third ending where you don't know if she's alive or not. Don't know how you get that one, though.
Oh, yeah, I don't know either.
So maybe you need to play it again and get good.
I guess so. Yeah, I was really into light gun games this time around. I even threw in the first Virtual Cop while I was at it. That's always a super fun game to play. So I have a light gun where it's compatible with both the original PlayStation and the Sega Saturn. So that was super fun. I need to get some.
Ooh, look at you.
Yeah, I need to get some. It also functions with the PS2 as well. So it functions all around. So I need to get some light gun games for the PlayStation. I don't think I have any. Think about it. No, don't think so. Mostly Sega Saturn. Yeah, I easily pass this game.
Yeah, I pass it.
I pass it as long as you're not spending $170 on it.
No. $20 was very, very worthwhile.
Yeah, it was fun. Definitely a pass.
Okay, next game, Joey.
Ooh, next game. I'm sorry I made you play this. Pokemon Snap for Nintendo 64. Developed by HAL Laboratory and published by, of course, Nintendo. Came out in 99 and in Europe in, what's AU, Australia, in 2000. So, this game, you take pictures of Pokemon, and then the Professor Oak tells you that your photos suck.
I mean, that's one summary of it.
And sometimes, even though you get a photo of the Pokemon, he can't recognize it. And he's like, there's nothing there. You're like, there's clearly a Pokemon right there. So I guess your character's name is Todd Snap, because why not? Todd Snap likes this Snap Pokemon. The professor made this rail car thing that he built just so you can take photos of Pokemon so you can send back to him so he can get better data.
Joey, I'm getting the feeling that you weren't enthused about playing this game.
No. This game was terrible. Like, I don't understand games that inverse only one of the axes.
axes.
So yeah, axes. So the up down inverse threw me off for some reason, because if it was all inverted, I could have dealt with it, but going right normally and then up and down being backwards was messing with my brain, that it just made it annoying.
This game is a good example of 1000% nostalgia for a lot of people, I feel. Because this game isn't great by any means. It's very one-note, simplistic. For a 9-year-old, a 9-year-old way into Pokemon, like many of us were back then, this game was fine. It totally served the purpose of, oh my god, I can get my Pokemon, I can go to Blockbuster or whatever and print out the pictures. Woo-hoo!
Picture. Yeah. Which is probably the only good feature, but it doesn't even have all the Pokemon. There's only 63 of them.
Yeah, lame. And it makes you replay levels over and over again so you can unlock pictures of other Pokemon, get, you know, find all the, I think all the legendary birds were in here. But yeah, I didn't play this longer than 40 minutes. It's a 4-hour game at minimum. It's not how I remembered it at all.
I think something like this could make a comeback if it was more open world and you have to like go around and try to get photos and do things to trick Pokemon to come out. But just as a real shooter taking photos, it's not that fun.
Yeah, so the Japanese version of the game is $7. Complete in box is 10, which I find funny. The American version is $20. So it's not the most expensive game in the world out there. There's a lot of copies. So yeah, I found this game just incredibly average, and it really brings the question, how are they going to make the next Pokemon Snap in 2021 coming out? Is it going to be more like this, or is it going to be, Joey, what you said, where it's a little bit more open world, a little more engagement? Because that's where I felt that this Pokemon Snap really falters, is I just didn't feel engaged enough.
Yeah, it. I don't know. I guess if they did something like Monster Hunter, but you just take photos instead, that could be fun, where you can actually get upgrades and it's just not the same thing over and over and over again.
That's something that I'd be into. Absolutely. Colin, what are your thoughts over the Snap of Pokemon?
Well, like you mentioned before, I remember playing a demo of this at Blockbuster way back when. I mean, it was, and like, also, like you said, it was pretty fun at the time, and the whole idea of it having branching paths was kind of cool. Like, throwing an apple at an Electrode to make it explode and then breaking open a hole in the side of a cave to create a new path. That was kind of a cool idea. Or chucking apples to get Pokemon into a certain spot. And then, like, for example, if there's 3 Magnemites that all get together in one spot, they'll evolve into a Magneton. Or if a Magmar is close to a Charmander, they'll fight and the Charmander will evolve into a Charmeleon. That was kind of a cool feature. But yeah, other than that, there's really not much to this game. It's really slow.
Really slow. That is a good word for it.
It's the slowest moving of all the games that on this cast. And yeah, other than that, not much to the game. Professor Oak's criteria is very unpredictable. The game will just like your photo whenever it wants. There's no real logic tying it all together. It's just...
Hey, he liked a Pidgey's butt more than he liked a face of Pikachu right center. So, I mean, he's got his priorities.
You've got a point.
Guy knows what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not really worth playing more than once or twice.
No,
so
not at all, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to fail this.
Yeah, I'm gonna fail it as well. Very disappointing, but filled with a lot of nostalgia nonetheless. But definitely not the best game on the list.
Yeah, I'll fail it too.
Well, bummer, guys. Okay, I believe the next one is my pick. We're going to the Sega Genesis, boys. It is Space Harrier 2. I'm a big fan of the original Space Harrier on the Sega Master System. I do like my Master System. Developed and published by Sega. Released October 29th, 1988. We're going way back here.
That's as old as I am.
Yeah. You want to talk about a game that could use a comeback in a little bit huge upgraded world and everything? Bring back Space Harrier. I will say, first and foremost, the music in this game is very lame. I don't think it fits the game at all.
I didn't think the music was that bad. I mean, yeah, maybe not fit the theme, but it wasn't terrible.
It's very chill. It's just...
Yeah.
So the whole game is, of course, a rail shooter, but you're a dude with a jetpack, and you can go, you can jetpack above the ground and run on the ground.
Was he in a jetpack? I couldn't see a jetpack. I just saw a guy floating around on the screen.
It's a jetpack.
Okay, so, he's just floating around on the screen. Gotcha.
Yeah. The plot isn't anything too crazy. It's our dude Harrier. Awesome name, by the way. He takes his cruiser, ends up on this like fantasy world, and it's being overrun by alien and hostile forces or another. So you just kind of shoot, you avoid super Cheerios that are coming at you at times. But most of all, you have to avoid all these fucking columns and pylons the entire time.
They're Fruit Loops that are attacking you.
Fruit Loops, okay. I stand corrected, Joey. I apologize, you're absolutely right. So because of all the shit that's in your way and how fast this game plays, it's very difficult. I only got as far as level 5 out of the 12 levels. The boss fights are fairly easy, but you can find yourself dying 2-3 times in a row just right away because of how easy it is to hit these objects and get hit yourself without kind of memorizing where the enemies are.
Yeah, I ran into a lot of trees.
Yeah, it's a problem. That's what makes the game super hard. You can find yourself getting pretty damn good at this, because I was wondering like what some of the later levels are, and watched this Let's Play, and this dude was just crushing it. I was like, of course he is. And he wasn't moving much different than I was. I think the difference clearly was he just knew where to be on the screen at certain times of the stage. So I'm like, okay, I don't have the patience for that right now. But as much as I love this game, it suffers from my cardinal sin is just too damn hard at times. I love the Dark Souls games, but they're just fucking hard. It's very aggravating. So,
oh jeez, did you see the zero punctuation on Demon Souls?
Yeah, nothing. Yeah, the whole reason why I'm not getting the Demon Souls remake is because it's just so frustratingly hard. When you die, you lose half your health. Great. After you beat a boss, that's when we'll give you your health back, but as soon as you die, it's all gone again. Fuck off. I hate that. I hate that so much.
I just remember Yahtzee making a joke like, now I don't give games bad ratings purely because they're hard. Hurt me more, daddy.
Oh, God.
Just cracked me up.
So I did really like, so there's a level in this, so you play on kind of this checkerboard on the third level. I think it's called Taros or something. The ceiling also becomes a checkerboard, so it gives you this like pseudo psychedelic claustrophobic feel to the level. That level was awesome. I played that at least 4 times. Very cool. Well, I didn't have a choice playing it 4 times after I died so many times. But anyways, that level was super fun, very unique. This game coming out in 1988, I do give it a little bit of a pass because of when it came out and what was around at the time. Like, I can imagine myself in 88 playing on my Sega Genesis and being like, this game is blowing my mind away. It plays very fast, very fun. It's just hard. So... you can beat this game in about an hour if you get good at it. I don't believe it's that expensive either. I don't
understand the enemies. They seem to be like random. First you're fighting ships, and then there's a three-headed turtle ship, and then there's a dragon, and like, did they just like, we'll throw that in the game. We'll throw this in the game. It just felt random what you were attacking.
Of course. What's wrong with that? I thought it was neat. I like the randomosity. That's a word, right? Yeah, it is now. You can get the game for about $10. $15 US is the general price. I say it's worth it if you're a big Space Harrier fan like I am. The game is worth the price. It's worth for your collection. I can't give it a super high score because of its difficulty level.
Yeah. For me, this game was pretty much just a slightly improved version of the first game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was some voice acting, so yep. That was, for the time, a pretty cool feature. And yeah, there's not much to the gameplay. Move up, down, left, right, diagonal while shooting. But it's a good pick-up and play game if you're just looking for something to kill time.
Oh, absolutely.
And you mentioned that a new and improved version should be made for modern day. That game already exists. It's called Sin and Punishment Star Successor on the Wii.
Oh, well, yeah, I have that. I suppose yeah. You could count that.
But yeah, I give this a pass.
Joey?
I'm on the fence about this one. It was okay. I guess if you're into the series pass, if you've never played the series, I'd probably say fail.
Alright, that's fair enough. Okay, so we got Colin's pick, and then we end with Kay's ghost pick.
Alright. My pick is Knife Edge Nose Gunner on the N64. Developed and published by Kemco. Released on the N64 in North America on November 10th, 1998. In Japan on November 27th, 1998. And in the EU in 1998. I picked this one because I remember playing it at a friend's house way back when, and we had a blast with it because it had co-op capability. And
it has four-player co-op.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, that was pretty much what made it the most fun, although that's pretty much a standard feature in most rail shooters that I know of. Like House of the Dead, that had two-player co-op at least.
Right, yeah, a lot of those arcade Lycan games have two-player options, yep.
Yeah. And playing it now, it's still fairly fun. I mean, it's a bit awkward to aim the reticle with the joystick, but the ability to launch screen-clearing bombs when you kill enough enemies and move your airship slightly to the side or up and down with the C buttons was kind of a novel idea, just to, like, dodge projectiles and such.
Yeah, that was a neat idea. That reticle was just so sensitive, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be a bit tricky. But I thought it was decent for what it was. Although at the third stage, it starts to feel a little bit like Star Fox 64 in terms of tone. Just you're going into this giant stone face to fight an alien fortress in the middle of a big cavern. And you've got all these big pyramid things coming up out of the top, shooting projectiles at you every which way. That was the stage where I kind of stopped playing because I didn't have a whole ton of time to spend on that. And plus, this is one of my complaints for the game. You die, you start all the way back at the beginning of the stage. There's no checkpoints or anything.
I mean, that didn't bother me too much, but I do get where you're coming from. Because the levels were exceedingly long at times, absolutely. I don't know, man. There's something... I thought the controls were interesting, but very cumbersome at times. I liked a lot of the ideas this game had. It just felt like it missed being more original. I felt like I've played this kind of game 1,000 times, just on a rail, I'm shooting... you know, tanks and stuff. Nothing really stood out to me this game, and that's an issue.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it seems very generic.
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, I liked it for what it was.
I mean, you can find this game for about $5. You know, for that price, I can't really fault, you know, at least giving it a try. Especially with the co-op option, I really like that. Even four-player co-op, that's really cool. So it could easily be a party-type game. And if I was to judge something on that, then yeah, you know, average nice little time. There's not a lot of games like this, especially on the Nintendo 64. This was the game that desperately needs a light gun, though. Because then I would feel way more engaged. That reticle just was super annoying to me. It was just so overly sensitive. The later levels get a little bit more difficult than I'd like, especially considering there's no light gun option. I think that was a huge miss on the company to not incorporate some sort of light gun into the game. Otherwise, I think I would have been a little bit more generous with it. Other than that, it's just not, there's just not enough original ideas to make it stand out, especially among the other games we played. Is it better than Pokemon Snap? Yeah, it moves a little bit better, I will say. So maybe better than Pokemon Snap. So
yeah,
definitely not my favorite railgun shooter of all time. That's for sure.
Did you guys have issues seeing some of the enemies on like the first level? I felt like their colors blended in with the background colors.
Oh, there's a lot of gray and brown blobs on this, and that was a huge problem. Some of the areas were better rendered and textured than others, I will admit. There was some cool areas to it, but mostly the game is very simplistic in backgrounds, to a fault because of what the N64 does with its giant polygons.
Yeah, it looks a bit muddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it to me feels a bit like a lesser version of the arcade light gun game Gunblade New York. Is that had like at least giant fucking machine gun light guns that had force feedback. I remember playing that one a lot at the bowling alley growing up, and that was fun. But this game doesn't quite capture the magic of that one.
No.
If I had a rumble pack, I might have enjoyed it a little more.
You don't have a rumble pack on your N64?
Not currently.
Oh! What is wrong with you, retro gamer Colin? Get with the program. What's the next thing? You don't have the expansion pack?
I have that one.
Okay, alright. Meet me halfway.
I needed it to play Perfect Dark.
About to say. You're going to have to reassess your retro gamer card here. Get a rumble pack. What are you doing? Man.
Once lockdowns finally ease up over here, I might.
Head on over to ANC Games and get your fucking rumble pack, you bitch.
I do have a retro gaming store here in town. It's just curbside pickup only right now.
Mm, okay.
And I'm too lazy to go online to get an order ready in advance. Or rather, I'm too worn out after work to set anything up.
Yeah, I feel you. Been busy here myself with that whole election and getting their guns taken away. Now people are ordering stuff. Blah, 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 blah. It's okay. I got a gun I've been using at home. A light gun.
I'll give Knife Edge Nose Gunner a soft pass.
Yeah, I can't do it. I'm giving it a soft fail.
I agree with Jaden.
Fair enough.
Soft fail. It's just not enough to make me want to play.
Okay.
At least it's not Pokemon Snap.
No. I'll be paying very close attention to the new Pokemon Snap that's coming out for the first time in, fuck, what would that be? 21 years? Jesus Christ.
Wow.
How has it lasted this long? Anyways, our last game is Kay's Ghost Pick. Kay is from the Wrestling Cast and his own podcast, Big Egg Joshi Podcast. He pops in for our fifth game pick now. He chose for us Crisis Zone, part of the Time Crisis series on the PlayStation 2, developed by Namco, published by Namco and Sony Computer Entertainment. It is a light gun shooter, rail shooter game, of course. Came out in the arcades in March 99. Hit the PlayStation 2 and whatnot in 2004 in the fall. This is probably what I think a lot of people will remember because it was hot in the arcades. Whether it was in my bowling alleys growing up, your bowling alleys, Colin, I'm sure, there was some sort of crisis, Time Crisis game there. Well, this is the original.
Yeah. Time Crisis 2 at the movie theaters.
Definitely Time Crisis 2. That's what I'm most familiar with. So this was the first one. It is a terrorist organization has taken over, you know, might as well be Nakatomi Plaza for all intents and purposes. Yeah. And what's the name of this? Not Scotland Yard. MI6, I suppose. Some shit in London's taken over and you gotta go stop it. So you have a machine gun, you have a shield. You have to put your shield up to
shield made of probably the strongest stuff in existence.
Absolutely.
Adamantium, vibranium, and Nokia cell phones.
I like that joke. Did.
I saw it in a YouTube comment.
That is a thumbs up to me, Nokia cell phone strength. Anyways.
Yeah.
This shield can stop tank missiles coming at you and machine gun fire from helicopters. It can do it all. It's a good damn shield. That in all my games.
Yeah.
I actually like that for a rail shooter.
Captain America would be jealous.
Say again, Joey.
I like that the shield was in it. It was nice having some kind of defense in a rail shooter.
Yeah, so the way that the arcade would work is you press the foot pedal, and that would put up the shield, or in the case of later Time Crisis games, if memory serves, there was two foot pedals, one for the shield and one to duck behind cover. This didn't have cover, it was just the shield, so they incorporated that later. And in the case of the light gun that I was using, there was a button on it to put the shield up, and then you can press the trigger to reload. So it really got you to kind of hold the gun with two hands and keep it up so you can keep pressing, putting the shield up. I quite like that in the game. The controls were very nice. There's a lot of bullets flying at you across the screen at all times. So in the way that the game tells you that a bullet is going to hit you or a knife is being thrown at you, whatnot, a red reticle will come over to the enemy about to shoot and kill you. So that's kind of your indicator to put your shield up. Or generally you get a feel that, hey, that enemy has been on the screen long enough. He's probably going to shoot me before I'm able to shoot him again. Put that shield up. The game was very, very smart in how it was able to incorporate these controls and how everything being indicated on the screen at excellent times, despite all of the nonsense that was being sprayed and shot all around the screen at all times. Very, very much adrenaline filled. I absolutely love this game. This was very fun.
Yeah, Time Crisis games are always rock solid.
Yeah, I was afraid this first one was going to have a lot of things missing in it that the sequels had, but as far as I could tell, it pretty much stuck to its guns, if you will, to be a very, very solid first entry in a series. This was really cool. I liked the tank battle, shooting all the things on.
I have one question about that. Who drives a tank into a mall? Who does that?
an asshole terrorist, Joey.
But why didn't he just start shooting his main gun right when he came in? He's just like, I'm going to drive around while this guy's shooting me. I'm not going to worry about him.
Considerate terrorists?
Oh, okay.
Maybe it takes a while for the tank to load its giant rifle projectile. Get your
so
second
it just
dude
like
in here.
Goes forward and backwards because it gets stuck. I just don't know why a tank would go inside of a mall. They could have just sat outside and shot it. I'm just saying. Those terrorists are dumb.
Don't worry about it. Terrorists are dumb.
Terrorists are dumb.
They're doing terrorist things. Of course they're dumb.
Not a good job at it.
So, I beat three stages. Very cool. The helicopter fight I thought was really awesome, where this giant... There's like four of them shooting at you, and then there's a giant kind of... fat armored version that you got to take down. A couple of those, you're on a walkway. I thought a lot of this game matched up quite well. This suffered from the same thing though. I wish there was more weapon variety, not just a machine gun the whole time. Maybe there is and I just didn't come across any, so maybe you can inform me if there were.
Yeah, one thing I found
again.
Go ahead,
one
Colin.
Thing I found a bit annoying was the sound of the shell casings hitting the ground the whole time. It was even louder than the gunshots themselves, ironically enough. But that's a small complaint. If there's any game I would buy a light gun for my PS2 for, it'd be this one.
Oh, and PS2 light guns are fairly inexpensive, so I do recommend it, and the Titan Crisis series is a lot of fun to play. This is no exception at all.
Hell yeah.
Joey?
Apparently the PS2, there's a flamethrower, a missile launcher, a laser rifle, a Gatling gun, and a grenade launcher, but you can only use it once per area.
Oh, so maybe I just didn't find it.
Me either. So now I'm wondering where they are.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. Yeah, I love the level layouts. I like all the enemies coming at you. There were some jump scares because dudes just, you turn around and dudes right in your face. House of the Dead did that, but it wasn't as surprising or shocking as much as Crisis Zone did.
I just want to know like how many of these enemies could hide behind the same box and just keep coming. Like they suck with the tank, but they're really good at hiding behind a box.
Dude, that missionary crawl, wow. you gotta go for it. Gotta get to that same box.
But I like that most of the things you could destroy on screen. Shooting the glass.
Yeah,
so many destructibles. Thing. That was my favorite part. There's like a magazine rack that you're shooting and just papers are flying everywhere in this convenience store area. That was really cool. Lot of attention to detail in this game, for sure.
Yeah, you can just spray and pray and just have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
There needs to be a VR Time Crisis game.
I'm looking that up right now. Time Crisis VR.
If that existed, I would buy a PSVR right now.
Crisis Brigade 2 is Time Crisis in VR. It's on the Oculus.
Oh, hell.
Interesting.
There you go. There's even a Crisis Brigade PSVR game, and it's $9. I might get this today. Yeah. Gimme, come on. Let me see. PlayStation Store. Being so... by Summer Lab Digital. Yeah, look at that. Oh, it even has Move controller support. Sweet!
Hot damn.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, it's good that it has Move controller support. It better. Well, shit. There's a $9 game in my pocket right now.
Awesome. So that was Crisis Brigade?
Brigade. VR. It's like Brigade, but VR. Get it? Ha ha ha.
Yeah, yeah. Hell yeah. Well, so, I think I know what I'm buying later this year.
Yeah, I mean, you can go through the main story in like 45 minutes. It's not a long game at all, but very much worth your time. Easy pass, I must say. Easy pass for Crisis.
Definitely. Easy pass.
Yeah, I definitely pass it.
Well, okay. Our five games we played for this podcast were House of the Dead on the Sega Saturn, Pokemon Snap on the Nintendo 64, Space Harrier 2 on the Sega Genesis, Knife Edge Nose Gunner on the Nintendo 64. So two N64 games to start off 2021 here. I think we only played like two or three in the entirety of 2020.
Yeah.
And Crisis Zone on the PS2. Joey, this was your theme pick. Favorite, least favorite, and your tier scores again. And just a reminder to the audience, we do keep tier rankings throughout the year. And we put on our tier ranker on redleafretrocast.blogspot.com, so you can keep up with where we give what tier averages all the games make, and then for the first episode of the next year we go through our top 10 games just like we did for the previous episode. All right, Joey, give me what you got.
Well, no surprise here. Least favorite, Pokemon Snap. Favorite, I'm probably gonna do House of the Dead. That's my favorite. Rating wise, although nothing's too high rating, I think it'd be more fun if I had a light gun like you. House of the Dead, I'll give a B. Pokemon Snap, I'm going to give a D. Would have given an F, but at least it's actually functional. Space Harrier, C. Crisis Zone, also a B. And Knife Edge, a C.
And what did you get, House of the Dead?
A B.
A B. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so light gun probably would have helped.
Yeah, I think just using a controller takes away a little bit from these games.
So my favorite is, I'm actually going Crisis Zone. I just liked, I think the more adrenaline was, I mean, it's obviously a much more recent game, but I thought it just, it was more adrenaline filled than House of the Dead, but damn, it was a 1A and 1B situation for me. I give House, and my least favorite is Pokemon Snap. I'm right there with you, Joey. I give House of the Dead and Crisis Zone A's. I give Space Harrier 2 a B. Pokemon Snap a D, and Knife Edge Nose Gunner a C. Colin, what you got?
Well, like you, my favorite is Crisis Zone. And least favorite, Pokemon Snap. For very much the same reasons as you. And in no particular order for my tiers, House of the Dead, I give a B. Pokemon Snap, a D. Space Harrier 2, a C. Knife Edge Nose Gunner, also a C. And Crisis Zone, I'm going to give an S.
An S, wow, okay. So that gives us all, let's see, a B for House of the Dead, D for Pokemon Snap, a C for Space Harrier 2, ouch, a C for Knife Edge Nose Gunner, ooh. And Crisis Zone gets an A. There we go. That's the episode. Our next episode is going to be, it's all about love.
Yay.
Podcast of love, baby. That's going to be an episode coming out on Valentine's Day. Excellent. Yes, it is my theme pick. It is romance for episode 86. So hope you get ready for lots of love for the next episode.
I'm going to get
lots of love and lots
wine.
Of verbal sparring for my pick.
I'm going to get some chocolate-covered strawberries and some wine for that episode. We're gonna get nice and sensual.
Chocolate-covered strawberries and chocolate wine. Chocolate wine is a thing.
Now that I gotta check out.
Yeah, so look forward to that, everybody. This was episode 85 of the Red Leaf Retrocast, and we'll see you next time.
Bye
bye now.